from DogNation.com. This is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans, presented by Marco's Pizza. Here's your host, Brandon Adam.
I think the conversation in the aftermath of the Georgia game on Saturday, at least in a lot of the places that I've sort of seen it taking place, has been pretty maddening. On the one side of the conversation, you've got people who say the Georgia win against Missouri was so troubling and so bad that this team is not seriously a national championship contender, would have no chance of beating Alabama, and is just a pretender to being as good as the Georgia team we saw a year ago. On the other side of that same coin, seemingly, we have those who are saying, are you crazy? This is a team that scored 40 points again for the fourth consecutive time to start the season, went on the road against an SEC opponent, still won the game by two touchdowns, still is undefeated, still is ranked number two in the country. This team is still just as good as we thought they were. I have to tell you, I think that conversation, at least the way that I've been seeing it play out, is pretty maddening. Frankly, it's kind of annoying because I don't necessarily think either of those two stark opposites are necessarily the true reality when it comes for Georgia this season. And whether you agree with me or not, I think it's really probably pretty good news that Kirby Smart sees things differently right now than many Georgia fans do. For the Georgia fans who want to either argue a diametrically opposed negative viewpoint or a diametrically opposed positive viewpoint, I think Kirby Smart's pretty good right now at sort of seeing things the way they are. A little good and a little bad on the heels of a Georgia performance that was described as some as sloppy, you might say uneven, you might say inconsistent with the standard that Georgia has sort of established in the past. Whatever it is, Kirby seems to be able to sort of process all of that at the same time. He saw some good. That adversity we talked about on Friday, seems like Georgia dealt with some more of that on Saturday and maybe passed that test. But there are other tests that Georgia face on Saturday that only the most absolutely optimistic of fans could say Georgia passed, at least in regards to the big tests that come later on in the season. Luckily, Kirby's perspective, I believe, is the right one. Here's what he said about it when it was over.
Well, I don't know what it says. I mean, it says that we can handle some adversity on the road, and when we're challenged, we responded well. But I'm not pleased with the discipline and composure we played with. You know, and it's not that I don't think we didn't play physical. We played physical, but Missouri's a good football team, guys. They won 9 out of 10 games, and I think we'll look back on this game and say they got a pretty good team here in a few weeks. I think Derek does a great job offensively, and if not for the turnovers and the blocked punt, this game's a whole lot different.
That may be true. Kirby may be right. Later on in the season, we look back on Missouri and say, wow, when Georgia beat them, that actually turned out to be a little bit better win than I would have imagined, because maybe Missouri is better than I thought they were going to be. Maybe many of us end up saying close to the same thing. But what I think we also hope to be saying, and what many of us think we'll also be saying is that Georgia is going somewhere here in 2018 that leaves the Missouri Tigers back in the dust. So the truth is, we may not be saying much of anything about Missouri in a few weeks, because I think Georgia fans hope they're not talking about Missouri at all. I think Georgia fans hope to be talking about some of those top national teams like Alabama and SEC championship game in December, and then somebody else in the college football playoff. And if that's the conversation that you're having, you're not speaking very much about Columbia, Missouri one way or another. But there were some things on Saturday, and this is what we'll spend at least a lot of the early portion of the week talking about. There were some things on Saturday that did not make Georgia look like a national championship contender. And one of the things that's the most concerning about that is it's two areas in which we've come to expect dominant performances from UGA. I thought both lines of scrimmage for Georgia on Saturday were really pretty suspect. That's a weird thing to be saying. I get the impression that many of you kind of feel the same way, that you just didn't see Georgia pushing people around and bullying its opponent the way that we've kind of come to expect. We'll get to the offense in a moment. I think part of that's due to injury here, but nonetheless, it's still worth dealing with. What's probably more concerning right now is on the defensive side of the ball for UGA. The fact that a Missouri team was, at least from an offensive footprint standpoint, maybe a little bit different than we would have expected. It was not a great day for Missouri quarterback Drew Locke, at least in terms of throwing touchdown passes, but far better for Missouri in terms of running the football. Now, I'll give a little credit here. Derek Dooley is an offensive coordinator. He may be a little bit better than I gave him credit for, because he has certainly made Missouri a little tougher. He has certainly made Missouri a little bit more physical. But I did not expect that team to look physical in comparison to UGA, which makes me think, is there a problem right now with the Georgia defensive line giving up rushing yards to the Missouri Tigers? Kirby Smart's not ruling that possibility out. He had some pretty blunt words in terms of how he assessed his defensive line's performance after the game on Saturday. Let's hear from the coach again.
I would probably not have thought that, but I thought that they would have struggled to run the ball. We pride ourselves on not allowing people to run the ball in. And if you told me what's the one most disappointing thing, they were able to run the ball, especially in the low red area. I mean, it's one thing to run it in the field, but they ran the ball in the low red area, which is concerning for us because that's not who we are.
I totally agree with Kirby on that. And when you think about the 2017 season, think about those moments in which you felt the worst about Georgia. There weren't too many of those all the way around. But the moments in which you felt the worst about Georgia would have been November against Auburn, where Kerryon Johnson had a pretty good day running the football. That didn't feel like we were watching Georgia there that day because the other team was having success running the football. Think about first half versus Oklahoma in the Rose Bowl. Think about, what is his name, Rodney Anderson running crazy against Georgia. That didn't feel like what we've come to expect from Georgia. The rest of the season, though, it was very solid there in that regard. So it was a pretty big departure from the typical blueprint for Georgia to see Missouri running the ball as effective as they did on Saturday. Now, it didn't impact Georgia in terms of losing this game. The truth is, I never thought at any point in time Georgia would lose. But when you watch Georgia not be able to stop the Missouri running game, at least as well as it wasn't able to do that on Saturday, it makes you wonder, does this Georgia team have a loss coming eventually if it can't shore up that part of what it's doing? And I'm not really sure what you do about that necessarily. This looked, unfortunately to me, on Saturday like a team that has not recruited very many defensive linemen over the last couple of recruiting cycles. And y'all know the numbers as well as I do in terms of who Georgia has signed at that position and maybe kind of who Georgia has sort of missed out on there in that regard. This, to me, on Saturday looked a bit like a team that's a bit thin when it comes to the defensive line. The point of attack, the tip of the spear for the Georgia defense against Missouri on Saturday, that group did not do enough. In fact, Kirby Smart was asked, what do you do about that? If you're disappointed in the fact that your team didn't stop the run better than they did, how do you get better at that with other big games against LSU and Auburn and teams like that looming? A better Kentucky team than you probably realized at the start of the season. How do you get better at all of this now? And once again, Kirby Smart kept it pretty candid.
You work on it. It's no magic. I mean, you just got to go to work. It's not like you can reinvent a defense. We had everybody in the box you could have in the box. We just didn't play physical enough. They outmanned us down there.
So listen, I think we're heading into a week against Tennessee on Saturday. Now, Tennessee's not very good right now. We'll have more on that coming up in a moment. But I think we're heading into a week against Tennessee where this defensive front's going to really be challenged here. And I think it's going to be challenged by some in the media. I may be doing some of that, not in any kind of mean-spirited or sort of poorly intentioned way, but just to say, hey, can we see the best of this group here, starting with the turning of the page towards October here in a couple of weeks? Can we see the best of this group? I can promise that whatever we say here on Dog Nation Daily, though, the words during practice, the words from other teammates back and forth with each other, going to be even more intense than that. This group wants to play better than it played on Saturday. My guess is pretty soon that it will. Let me shift the gears here to offense here for a moment. Probably a better second half than a first, but in the first half against Missouri, Georgia doesn't even score an offensive touchdown. Now, part of that, for me, I think can be explained away by the fact that Andrew Thomas is not playing. I think Georgia missed him. Cade Mays doing a pretty good job as a freshman, but the left side of that offensive line right now, I think, to put it kindly, is maybe a bit unsettled. I think that makes your play calling curious at times. Some of that was probably true for Georgia on Saturday. But overall, in terms of kind of a sloppy first half offensive performance, Kirby Smart talked during his postgame press conference about what he told his team at halftime in terms of how he expected them to do better in the final 30 minutes than they had done in the first 30.
Wake up, play with better composure, better discipline, be who we are, execute. You know, I mean, it wasn't the things we were doing weren't right. We weren't executing a lot of them. We had a couple RPOs batted down, had a couple holding calls that set us back. We just got to overcome a lot, and that's one thing we've been able to do so far on offense is have some explosive plays and have some today in the passing game.
I think the good news here is in terms of the message that Kirby Smart was delivering to his team there at halftime, it was already being received by players. They already knew what he was going to say before he said it. In fact, the reason why I know that is because our buddy Mike Griffith caught up with Georgia quarterback Jake Fromm after the game on Saturday, and it sounds like based on Fromm's own assessment of the first half that Kirby didn't have to tell him that it wasn't good enough. Fromm, who's got a very strong sort of internal motivator, intrinsically motivated to be the best that he can be, I don't think that he thought his play or the Georgia offense sort of lived up to his standard for himself or his standard for his teammates, because he was frankly Fromm just as blunt as Kirby Smart has been. Here's the quarterback.
I think we left a lot of plays and a lot of points out there, so we needed to play better on offense in the first half and just really execute.
So listen, I mean, here's the bottom line for me. You can sort of break down the offensive performance, what it didn't do, especially in the first half. You can break down the defensive performance of maybe not being as physical along the line of scrimmage as we've come to expect from Georgia. This was a game where there were a lot of questions to be asked about how close is this team to that sort of national championship contention, that sort of playoff positioning, if that's what we saw against Missouri. Those are all legitimate questions. It was not a perfect game from Georgia. It was a game that was good, but probably not great. Ultimately, though, it's still very early in the season. And ultimately, even the best teams in college football from year to year have games in which they don't quite look, if you just took the snapshot of that one game, they don't quite look as good as they might look for the other 11. This may end up being the same kind of thing for Georgia. It was not a great day, but it might not ultimately be that big of a deal. Georgia's got plenty of time to improve, and my guess is those improvements begin this week in practice and are put on display for everybody to see in front of 93,000 versus Tennessee coming up this Saturday. My name is Brandon Adams. This is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans, presented by Marco's Pizza. Good to have you with us. Live on video, 10 a.m. Dog Nation Facebook, YouTube, and Twitter feed. On the radio at noon on Athens Sports Radio 960 The Ref, and in podcast form, wherever you can find podcasts. The Apple Podcast Player, the Google Podcast Player for the Android devices, the world-famous DogNation.com, SoundCloud, pretty much wherever you find podcasts, you can find Dog Nation Daily. Glad to have you find us today. As I look out the window here to my left in our beautiful palatial Dog Nation World Headquarters studios, it is a dreary day for a Monday around the state of Georgia, which only makes me think, what is that line from the movie Office Space, but having a case of the Mondays? There may be several cases of the Mondays around the state here today. If that be the case, then how about you take the night off from cooking? Because there's nothing that sort of cheers you up on a Monday better than to sit down with a great offer from our friends at Marco's Pizza. Two medium, two topping pizzas for just $6.99 each. You got to go to Marco's.com to take advantage of the authentic Italian quality pizza. Giammarco family recipe in the sauce. Three cheeses blended, melted together on top of that authentic Italian crust. Check them out there. Take advantage of a great offer. Two medium, two topping pizzas. $6.99 each. We love to have Marco's Pizza as a part of a Dog Nation Daily, and I love to have Marco's Pizza as part of my dinner plans as well, or lunch plans, or kind of whatever you've got going on. I know some of you have fall break with your kids. Maybe you're staying home today. If that be the case, that's even better opportunity to take advantage of a little Marco's Pizza for lunch. Who are you kidding about that? That's good times. All right, we got Chip Towers here coming up. Before that, though, let me go around the doghouse here on this Monday, brought to you by Pella Window and Doors. And I did start to show off with, I guess, my more, I don't want to say negative, but more, what's the right word? I guess maybe it is negative. Maybe I was a little negative off the top of the program here today. But there is also some positive to be discussed with what Georgia did on Saturday against Missouri. One aspect in particular that I want to get to, we'll make that the sort of main subject of our Around the Doghouse today, brought to you by Pella Window and Doors, and that is that I thought that Georgia made life, for the most part, pretty uncomfortable for Missouri quarterback Drew Locke on Saturday. I felt like that was kind of nice to see. I wrote about this at DogNation.com on Friday for my By the Numbers piece in terms of the pass rush that Georgia has not established yet, why I think Georgia needs to get one kind of going before the season is done, and I even kind of predicted in that piece, if you read it at DogNation.com, and I hope that you did. I even kind of predicted that I thought that against Missouri we might see more of that. Well, we did, and it's one of the main reasons why Georgia won the game, especially when you think about the contribution of outside linebacker DeAndre Walker, When you think about DeAndre Walker kind of leading the way there in that regard, we finally saw more of a pass rush from Georgia in the fourth game of the season than we had seen at any point in time in the first three, which I thought was really kind of a nice thing. And Kirby Smart gave that group, the outside linebackers and those sort of contributing to that pass rush, he gave them a pretty nice compliment after the game about what they were able to do to kind of affect and impact Locke in a positive way for Georgia. Here's Kirby once again.
I thought as a whole, our pass rush was able to at least affect him, get him out of the pocket, bat balls, cause a fumble. I mean, there's a lot of disruption there, which is what we needed to do. We haven't really had a chance to do that. This was a game to do that because he wanted to be in the pocket and he wanted to throw the ball from the pocket, and you've got to try to affect a pocket passer, and I thought that we were able to affect him today.
I mean, the best thing for me about this, the way that they did affect Drew Locke, to use Kirby Smart's words there, is that it proves what's also possible for the rest of the season. Because in crucial games coming up against LSU, you're going to need that. You may even need some of that against Jared Garantano on Saturday. Don't let the big blowout loss to Tennessee to Florida necessarily fool you on that. You may need to get after Garantano a little bit. Georgia shows they're capable of doing that. I think that's definitely true against Jared Stidham coming up later on in November, and then whatever happens after that. So Georgia proved capable of that on Saturday, and for me, that's a really good thing. Around the Doghouse here on Mondays and Dog Nation Daily is brought to you by Pella Window and Doors. And Pella Window and Door of Georgia can help you equip your house with energy-efficient windows and doors. They're family-owned and operated. They have a branch right here in Georgia, which means you get the local service, also backed by a national company. And right now, how about this offer? You can currently get 50% off qualifying installations or 0% APR for 48 months. It's valid through November 8th. Pella Window and Door also offers the best lifetime warranty with top-of-the-line equipment and unparalleled expertise. So schedule your free in-home consultation today, and Pella's winning team will take care of everything, including the measurements. It's super easy to do. Just go to PellaSoutheast.us or give them a call in their Dunwoody showroom at 404-445-2979. Let me give you those one more time. The website, PellaSoutheast.us. The phone number, 404-445-2979. It's great to have Pella Window and Door here as part of Around the Doghouse every Monday on Dog Nation Daily. It's also great to have Chip Towers here as well. There is still a lot from the Georgia game on Saturday we haven't unpacked yet, including some injuries and some other sort of key moments from the game. We'll try to do as much of that as we can here on this Monday. Good to have you with us, too. Hope you enjoy Chip Towers right now.
From Athens and across the SEC or wherever the recruiting trail may lead, here's a DogNation.com insider.
Say hello to Chip Towers here on a Monday on Dog Nation Daily, presented by Marco's Pizza. And Chip, there is a lot I want to get into today, so I hope if you don't mind, I'm going to kind of dive right into it and see how much ground we can cover over the course of the time we have together. And I guess one of the first things that sort of pops up for me is, I was just talking about the Georgia pass rush a moment ago, which did sort of show up against a Missouri more so than it has in any other game this season. But overall, that notwithstanding, it just seems like we're watching a slightly different kind of Georgia defense right now. One that's led far more by its secondary. DeAndre Baker could be an All-American. Richard LeCount looks like a star. Tyson Campbell is a very impressive young freshman, although he did battle some illness, I guess, on Saturday. And J.R. Reed's a very solid starter at the other safety position. This secondary right now almost seems like it's leading the way for this defense, which is not really the personality that we've come to expect from Kirby Smart's Georgia defenses, is it?
Well, it's certainly not the narrative we had going into the season, you know, knowing that Georgia was having to, you know, come up with essentially three new starters in that secondary for the 2018 season. And, you know, I agree with you, Brandon. At this point, I would say that secondary is probably the strength of Georgia's defense, and it's just going to get better. I mean, this is still a young team. You know, overall, 68% of the team is freshmen and sophomores, and Georgia probably has more defensive backs than any other position with maybe the exception of wide receiver. That's a young group, very, very young group. And as you saw, you know, Tyson Campbell, you know, forces a fumble, scoops it up, takes it back 64 yards for a score, you know, hurts himself a little bit in the process and then ends up sick. And then Eric Stokes comes in and, you know, certainly gets a lot of attention for the block punt and scoop and score on that play. But, you know, he had, by my count, four pass breakups in the game. You know, in addition to the block punt, because, you know, understandably, Missouri targeted him all day long. And so that secondary has become quite a strength. There was also kind of a sneaky good pass rush in this game. I mean, in particular, DeAndre Walker. Yep. I'm actually working on this story right now. You know, on second glance, he played a whale of a football game. He played more snaps than he has all year long. You know, he's obviously kind of a designated pass rusher as it is. He has three sacks, Brandon. I don't think most people realize that, but I mean, if you extrapolate that over a season, you know, he's on a 9-sack pace right now. It's been a while since Georgia's had that many sacks for any individual, and he's playing a lot more. He's starting to play a lot more on rundowns, you know, not just pass rush especially. So, I mean, I see this some maturation going on for this defense overall. But you, Tyler Clark playing pretty solid up front, and you know, just kind of coming of age, which probably should be been expected considering where they were at the beginning of the season anyway.
So, good day for the Georgia secondary. Emmanuel Hall was completely neutralized. He may have been hurt, but nonetheless, he was completely neutralized. You mentioned DeAndre Walker, the Georgia pass rush. That's commendable as well, which leads us back to the Georgia, you know, line of scrimmage, the rush defense. I talked about that before you joined us. We played some audio of Kirby Smart with his post-game press conference. And, Chip, I guess overall, what do you make about this? As I said a moment ago, this looks like a program that hasn't recruited recruited very well at that spot for the last couple of recruiting cycles, which is indeed the case, at least in terms of the overall bodies they brought in. Not a huge number of 4- and 5-star guys. And right now it just seems like there's some either numbers missing or some beef missing, because I don't know, Chip, that's not what we've come to expect from Georgia in terms of really being able to shut down a team's running game. But on Saturday, you know, Missouri was just able to get that push and able to open those holes, and that's what kept this game closer than some Georgia fans wanted it to be.
Yeah, well, that's your concern for Georgia right now. They're just not as physical inside and interior play that you really need to be. Some of that, you know, should have been probably expected with Roquan Smith and then certainly Big John Atkins and Trent Thompson moving on. You know, that's some serious beef that you're missing right now. I've seen a lot of rotation at the nose guard position. I'm not sure that Julian Rochester is a natural nose guard. You see Jay Hayes getting pushed in there to play a good bit. That's not a natural position for him. So you're missing a lot of that girth right there in the middle, and I think that it translates in what Georgia's opponents are doing running the football. Now, it's all relative. I mean, I think, you know, there's a lot of teams in the SEC that would, trade right now with what Georgia is doing on defense overall. You're giving up 3.8 yards a rush, which is not terrible, but it's just been the first down gains when you kind of got to be expecting the football to come in the middle and come between the tackles. Georgia's not doing real well. And look, you're going to see a lot more of that against Tennessee. Obviously this is not a great football team. Jeremy Pruitt has his hands full, and there's a lot, going on. But he's also committed to a lot of the same things that Kirby Smart, Nick Saban, and all the people off of that that coaching tree believe in. So, you know, like it or not, you know, you're going to get a lot of that. You're going to continue to get that as Georgia, moves kind of up into the next level of SEC play, for the rest of the season.
We'll get back to the conversation, the Georgia Bulldogs, in just a moment. I will say this, though. It's kind of fun on Saturday, kind of a rare day for us to be back at the Dog Nation World Headquarters Studios on Saturday. We got the two TVs going. I had Georgia-Missouri on one and the TV up top. I had the Atlanta Braves taking care of its business, their business against the Philadelphia Phillies on Saturday, clinching the National League East. And it brought back so many great memories for me for that Saturday back in 1991 when the Braves won the National League West back then for the very first time. Georgia also knocked off a top-5-ranked Clemson for a great win there at Sanford Stadium, and to be celebrating both those sports moments again here all these years later is just really, really exciting. And it puts to mind for me the fact that Dog Nation, at least everybody that I'm hearing about, is super excited about the return of postseason baseball to Atlanta with the very first ever postseason game being played at SunTrust Park. The Braves are going to be there. They've clinched the National League East, and now it's time for you to make your plans to be there as well. Go to Braves.com/postseason. That website, once again, Braves.com/postseason. Let's fill up SunTrust Park. Let's make a bunch of noise and celebrate what has been just an unbelievable season for the Atlanta Braves. They put out a really cool hype video the other day at their Twitter account, @Braves on Twitter, which just sort of celebrates all of this. And I just think it's been a magical season for Atlanta, and I cannot wait to see where it goes next in the month of October. I'm looking forward to being at SunTrust Park coming up in October for the postseason. I want you to be there as well. Braves.com/postseason, and you can get your tickets for Major League Baseball playoff action returning here to Atlanta. Chip, let me turn our attention back to Georgia here and talk to you a bit about the Georgia offense, and in particular Jake Fromm, who was better in the second half than he probably was in the first. And overall, you know, subtract the the two non-offensive scores, it's still, from a points scored standpoint, not a terrible day for the Georgia offense here. And yet it seems like it's, if you'll allow me to be frank here for a moment, just less than what it could be. What do you make of Jake Fromm thus far through four games this season?
Well, I think really Jake Fromm is quietly putting together a fantastic season and really kind of hidden in all this is he's answering a lot of criticism, you know, coming into the season. I mean, if you look at that game, and I don't know. I mean, Georgia got some breaks. I mean, there were a couple of passes where, you know, he hits guys with receivers right on them down the sideline, and they turn them into really long, completions and touchdowns. So I saw that and I understand it. But, you know, you're talking about, you know, he completed 5 of his 10 passes that were 10 yards or more. And, you know, and 3 of those go for TDs, and he's really good against the blitz right now. I mean, I don't think people realize that Georgia's numbers. I was looking at Pro Football Focus this morning, and his numbers are really, really good when teams try to blitz him. I think we've also seen how he's really going through the progressions right now. There was one play, two plays in particular, I remember making a note of on Saturday where it looked like he completed the ball to his third progression. Now, you know, he didn't complete certainly as high of a percentage as we've seen all year. He came into the year, you know, completing 80% of his passes. But, you know, Georgia was, you know, clearly the strategy was to get downfield against Missouri, throw the ball downfield and take advantage of that. And, yeah, he was really, really good in that respect. And also, Brandon, you know, a little tip of the cap here on Georgia's offensive line. You got to think, you know, this is a game where you lost, you know, you try to get Andrew Thomas, you lost him again, and Big Ben Cleveland goes out of the game. But once again, you know, Jake wasn't pressured a whole lot in the game. Yeah, they were, like I said, they were blitzing and trying to get pressure on him. But I, you know, I don't think he was under duress, but maybe once or twice during the entire game. So, you know, tip of the cap to Georgia's offensive line too. They're not perfect, and they're still trying to work out some things on Georgia's offense. But they're real close, and I could see them really putting together a whale of a game possibly this weekend against Tennessee.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to see how that all does come together. And since you bring up the offensive line, let me go there for a moment. You know, I think that for a fan, I think the absence of here of Ben Cleveland, as it's been reported, I guess, 4 to 6 weeks for Cleveland, I think that's a potentially nerve-wracking thing for many Georgia fans. I think there are a lot of fans who sort of hope to hear some good news maybe over the next few days or next couple of weeks about the development of Jamari Salyer, maybe the development of, you know, Trey Hill, another one of these freshmen that seems to be, you know, kind of close but hasn't really maybe broken through yet. I do, Chip, think this offensive line is still unsettled. I think now you can say with Cleveland injured, both guard spots, I think, for me, are still pretty big question marks here. And Georgia's going to play some pretty big games over the course of the time that Cleveland's expected not to play here. And I think this becomes a really curious storyline. What do you make of life without Ben Cleveland here for a little while?
Well, I mean, let's face it. We're talking about LSU. I mean, I think, you know, Tennessee and Vanderbilt, as we saw against Missouri, you know, I think Georgia's line, and let's not, you know, let's not lose the respect that has to be offered to this offensive line for the depth that it has. There's so many options Georgia can have. But here's the thing. I think you're going to see a lot of those options exercise in these next couple of weeks as Georgia tries to figure out what's the best formula going forward. Now, listen, I love Ben Cleveland. Great player, unbelievable player. He's starting at right guard, obviously, because he's the best option at right guard, certainly according to Sam Pittman and Jim Chaney and Georgia's offensive staff. But he does lack a little mobility when it comes to, you know, the passing game, when it comes to pass protection. And I think Georgia might be able to get a little more nimble during this, you know, little stretch here. Now, let's not forget, you know, you got Kendall Baker who started, you know, 13 games or whatever it was last year at that left guard position. He's always an option. And then you've recruited, you know, just through the roof, you know, with guys like Jamari Salyer and Trey Hill. Don't lose sight of Jamari Salyer. He didn't play this past weekend, but he was on that travel roster, yeah, you know, to Missouri. So he's in the conversation for sure. And we hadn't seen all that much of the number one guard in the country. Now you lose a guard. I don't know. I could definitely see a scenario where Solomon Kinley jumps over from that left guard position where he's been playing back over to right guard to give Georgia the girth they like on that right side. And then you have a lot of options at left. You know, Trey Hill, Jamari Salyer, and then Kendall Baker, a guy who has a ton of experience. I'm just really impressed, you know, with what Georgia has built here in offensive line just to have all those options. And Cade Mays is playing pretty doggone good. You know, not great,
sure,
but he's playing pretty doggone good at left tackle. No sacks this past weekend against Missouri. And if you can keep that going for a couple more weeks, you should be in pretty good shape by the time you head to Baton Rouge.
Let me try to squeeze in two issues before we're done. I want to do the J.J. Holloman near blunder before we finish off here. Let me do something on Rodrigo Blankenship before we get there, though. Kirby was not asked about Blankenship after the game, but the touchback streak did come to an end on Saturday. Is this one of those deals, Chip, where all good things must come to an end, or did the open end zones because of the construction create a swirling wind there? I was not at the game. You were. anything to Blankenship missing a field goal, having the touchback streak come to an end, or is this just, as I said, one of those deals where all good things end eventually?
Yeah, well, yeah, you weren't going to go, 100 for 100 on touchbacks for a season. That's just not going to happen. There was actually a really good win blowing. If you notice, the touchbacks that he didn't get were both when he was kicking into the wind to that. I'm trying to think. We were looking to the east, and so when Georgia was kicking to the north end, he wasn't able to get the touchback every time. When he's going the opposite direction, he got it every time. And the 49-yard kick, that's going to happen sometimes. That was a push. He kicked it. He had plenty of strength, and he was going with the wind. But again, it's very, very, very rare that you ever have a perfect season as a kicker. And I think it was just one of those situations where there was a high wind and Rodrigo, wasn't able to get to the end zone every time. I think you'll see that streak, get picked back up depending on which way the winds are blowing this week, but you're not going to kick them all out of the end zone all the time.
Real quick final point for you. I joked about this on Saturday. If I'm J.J. Holloman, here's what scares me the most. Now, obviously, there's really only one side to the debate of don't drop the football early. I mean, that's just maddening. We all agree with that. Every fan listening right now agrees with the same thing. But if you want to take it to sort of the next level, if I'm Holloman, here's what scares me to death. The fact that publicly Kirby hasn't acted mad about this at all. He didn't really – he said it's inexcusable with you guys in the post-game press conference, but he certainly didn't blow his top about this in the post-game press conference. And I was watching on TV, Chip, and really at no point in time in the immediate aftermath did he sort of get that sort of red-faced scowl the way that he's kind of known to on some other issues, which means that privately it is going to be a very intense conversation. I just thoughts and prayers out to J.J. Holloman, Chip, is all I can say, because I can only imagine privately what this is going to be like for him over the next couple of days.
I'm wondering what kind of drill you could do, that to repeat this. I would imagine all Georgia skill players are going to be running 110 yards where you start at the goal line. You run all the way to the other end of the field. You run through the goal line, and then you kneel and put the ball down on the back line of the end zone, and then turn around and do it again the other way, right?
Yeah, maybe so.
Yeah, I think that's probably. I think that's not a bad ploy. Is Georgia? Let's go back to the early beginnings of football when you had to kneel down and put the ball on the ground, kind of rugby style they have now. I think that's what Georgia needs to do. Going forward, all our guys are going to get into the end zone, take a knee, and set the ball down, and that's why it's called a touchdown. Get in there, put the ball down.
Chip, it's always great to talk to you. I know you've got a busy week planned there at DogNation.com. We will look forward to reading every word, and, of course, we'll enjoy speaking to you here again on Dog Nation Daily, presented by Marco's Pizza very soon as well.
See you, bud.
And we'll get ready.
Let's take a look around the rest of the league. This is SEC Through.
Really good stuff there from Chip Towers, and I'm not going to do a whole big thing on the J.J. Holloman stuff, just because what else are you going to really say? I mean, it's just it's inexcusable to have this happen for a second time in just four games. And somebody was saying that something else similar to that happened in the Austin Peay game, which I did not really see, but it's just inexcusable. So there's really only – I mean, I like conversation. I like debate. I like – somewhat controversial topics. There's nothing controversial about this whatsoever. This is just cut and dry. Give the ball to the referee, put it in the stands, run all the way into the tunnel, just do whatever you have to do. So I also don't want to let the fact that Holloman made this blunder, which is probably an easier mistake to realize to make than people realize, I really don't want it to obscure too much from the fact that Holloman is turning into a player, y'all. And ultimately, that's what's going to be more important for Georgia this season, the fact that he almost dropped the ball before the end zone. I do think he'd crossed the plane. I hope, anyway. I think that he did. I mean, what's becoming the bigger story here is that Holloman's becoming a player for Georgia. And by the end of the season, this is going to be a receiver that you're really putting some faith and trust in, which is kind of a nice thing to see. One more thing before we move on with our SEC through. I think that Chip's assessment of the Georgia offense right now is a little bit more positive than mine is. Not because I'm overly negative about the group. I'm not. I guess the only word that I can use is, right now, things for the Georgia offense just don't look easy. I watch college football, especially this particular Saturday when I was home. I watched college football all day and night, and some of these college teams right now are just scoring with ease. Georgia's putting 40 points every single week up on the board. It just doesn't seem to be as easy right now as you'd like for it to be. Now, I don't think there's any one player that takes the blame for that more so than the other. I think the guys that Georgia's put its faith and trust in, a quarterback, running back, everywhere else, offensive line included, I think they're for the most part getting the job done. But we even heard from Jake Fromm a moment ago say that there are points that Georgia left out there. So in a roundabout way, maybe he's saying the same thing. Hey, we're making this look harder than it's supposed to be when we're surrounded by as much talent as we're surrounded by right now. So that's at least my thought on that. We'll look forward to seeing how this group breaks out against Tennessee on Saturday. Speaking of Tennessee, my oh my, the Florida-Tennessee game was a mess. Now, Florida wins the game easily. I still don't think the Gators are very good at all. I have no problem telling that whatsoever. This is not a good team whatsoever. But listen, they got the big win, so you got to give them credit for that. The other side, though, here is the Tennessee part of this. The Vols looked awful. I mean, I don't know how else to say this. Jeremy Pruitt seems very, very overmatched at the moment by the challenges of being a first-year head coach. A lot of times on stuff like this, optics are worse than they actually appear to be. This may be the case with a Jeremy Pruitt, but the optics here are not very good. If you're watching on video, I'll give you an example of this. You know, bad game, frustrating moment on the sideline. Take a look at this piece of video of Pruitt walking over and just putting his foot right through a whiteboard. Now, listen, a lot of coaches have shown some frustration when it comes to stuff like this during a game, but this particular snapshot, the GIF or the JIF, depending on how you want to pronounce it, this is the kind of thing that's just going to be used against Pruitt to sort of show his level of what looks like right now, ineptitude. Now, this is not a talented team. We predicted this would be a team that would have a hard time winning an SEC game before the season started. So what we saw from them on Saturday is not necessarily all that different from what we expected to see. But read John Adams at the Knoxville News Sentinel this week as an example of this. Some of the blame for this is being laid at the feet of Pruitt. The fact that he's a little bit more buttoned up with the media than previous Tennessee coaches have been probably doesn't help there in that regard. Right now, Pruitt's got a perception problem that he's battling against. Making things even worse, the fact that Corte Sapp, as a player who was seen leaving the sideline on Saturday, after the game, Jeremy Pruitt says, "I told him to leave. We asked him to go in the game, and then he didn't go in the game, so I told him to go to the sideline." Well, Corte Sapp then goes on Twitter and sort of tweets out his own response to this. We'll show it to you here in terms of what Sapp said. He says, "I'm only going to address this situation publicly once, knowing the current narrative has been created through miscommunication." This is Tennessee player Corte Sapp. He says, "During the Tennessee-Florida game, I was never asked, nor did I refuse to go into the game. There was a sideline confrontation, I'm sure it'll be resolved internally, that occurred, and the other party involved had to be restrained." So here you've got a Tennessee player publicly refuting what a Tennessee coach, the head coach, said during a post-game press conference. It is a mess in Knoxville right now as Tennessee gets ready to make its way to Athens on Saturday. Over at Alabama, it's the exact opposite of that. Alabama dominant again over Texas A&M, so much so that Nick Saban going sort of a very different tactic with his idea of the media and rat poison, essentially begging the media now to say something bad about his team. Here's Nick Saban, courtesy of Alex Scarborough from ESPN, on what he told his team. We'll show you this on Twitter once again here. He says, Saban stops, says Alex Scarborough, the ESPN writer, before leaving and telling reporters, "I would appreciate it if you looked at the things we didn't do so well." This is Nick Saban talking here, essentially challenging the media to find some bad things about Alabama because right now Alabama is just blowing everybody out. Listen, the world is loving Alabama right now, and how could you not? Through four games, they've been dominant. I think sometimes, though, these narratives get out in front of themselves just a bit. Let's not assume that this is going to be a 12-game story for Alabama necessarily, because in college football, things have a way of not being quite as easy as you expect them to be. But right now, obviously, Saban and Alabama are riding high. One more game to get to here as a part of our SEC through. Let's talk about Kentucky dominant over Mississippi State here. Kirk Herbstreit loving what he saw from the Kentucky Wildcats. Herbstreit on Twitter also throwing some praise out here. Congratulations to Coach Stoops and Kentucky football on an impressive and dominating performance against Mississippi State. Cats taking names and a team that needs to be ranked in the teens this week. I believe they were. They were 17th in the Associated Press poll, I believe. Do I have that number right? 17th, I think Tennessee was in the AP poll this week, so some love being shown to Kentucky for that. And then Benny Snell, who had kind of gone back and forth last week. Snell's the very good Kentucky running back who had his issues with some of the folks on the Mississippi State side of things. I guess he gets the last word here, and you've heard it said, don't feud the newspaper. You don't want to battle with somebody that buys ink by the barrel. I think the new modern phrasing of that be, don't get into a public war of words with someone who's as good as at Photoshop as Benny Snell is, because, and I realize it's kind of a visual thing, so if you're listening to the radio show or the podcast, you may not get this, but I'll describe the picture the best I can. Benny Snell on Twitter says, "I speak facts," and it's a picture of him running in the game against, actually, I guess that's Florida that he's running with, but instead of a football, it's been replaced by Bully, the Mississippi State mascot. He's holding the bulldog as if it was a football. A beautiful Photoshop work there by Benny Snell, and I guess sort of the knockout punch in that war of words that he'd had with Mississippi State last week. We'll make that your SEC through, and as I do, let me also remind you of this. You know, some of the games last week I was pretty good on, others not so much. I gave you a winner at South Carolina. I gave you a loser, unfortunately, with Tennessee. Stayed away from Alabama, Texas A&M. That probably ended up being the right choice. Either way, hope your picks were better than mine were. And if they were, well, then you can certainly make some money off those by playing with the pros play at MyBookie. And right now you can even get your first deposit match dollar for dollar. But you got to use the promo code DOGNATION, spelled one word, the way it's supposed to be, D-A-W-G, DOGNATION. Find MyBookie online, M-Y-B-O-O-K-I-E. What's even great right now is your first deposit is going to be matched dollar for dollar. But you got to find them online, MyBookie online. Use the promo code DOGNATION. Your first deposit can be matched dollar for dollar. Then you play, you win, you get paid. It's as simple as that with MyBookie. And with that said, let me turn my attention back here to the Georgia Bulldogs for a moment, and let's do our R.S. Andrews Cool Under Pressure Performer of the Week. And how about the job that Eric Stokes does on Saturday, both playing a lot of cornerback, given the fact that Tyson Campbell is battling illness, and then when opportunity opened up on the punt coverage team, Eric Stokes slides in there and gets the punt block for, and then takes it back for a touchdown, an unbelievable special teams play. He's our R.S. Andrews Cool Under Pressure Performer of the Week, and how can you not be when you got Kirby Smart after the game saying these kinds of words of praise, the way that Smart threw them towards Eric Stokes? Take a listen to this.
Eric's first of all, he's a great competitor. I told the team after the game, here's a guy who got beat out, never whined, never cried, never pouted. He just worked. And when you just work, you get better. And he's not even a starter on punt return. He didn't even get to take reps to do that block. He went in because he paid attention to the guy that was in front of him, executed it for Tyler Simmons perfect, and really played well today. But it didn't surprise me because he practices well. I mean, that kid plays well. I told you he had a really good camp, and it paid off for him today.
Yeah, listen, I love Kirby Smart saying that. It's a great story for Eric Stokes. That's why he's our R.S. Andrews Cool Under Pressure Performer of the Week. And R.S. Andrews wants you to remember, you know, those guys that always get, like, the best seats at the game, the VIP access. They beat the crowd. And, you know, the feeling you get when that's you? Well, listen, that's the exact same feeling you're going to get with R.S. Andrews as well. When it comes to the $99 fall furnace checkup, it's all the coverage you need to keep you safe, including inspecting your heat exchange for leaks, checking filters, your flu, your vents. R.S. Andrews does all that for you. They're going to get your system up to the factory fresh specs, and it's all just $99. You can get that great seats feeling right now with my friends at R.S. Andrews. Simply find them online at rsandrews.com, and they'll have you up and running and make sure that your furnace is ready for the winter to come. Find them online at rsandrews.com. All right, we will wrap up here, and 33 days from right now, Georgia goes back to Florida, and I don't care what the Gators did against Tennessee on Saturday. We still don't think the lousy, stinking Gators are very much to write home about in 33 days from right now. We think Georgia beats Florida again. It's our Gatorator Countdown right here on Dog Nation Daily, presented by Marco's Pizza. And I guess, as a way of kind of closing things out today, I guess let me also say this. You know, Georgia fans are in a position right now where they can nitpick a 2-touchdown win against Missouri, and they can say that's not up to the Georgia standard. The Georgia players and coaches themselves say, hey, this was sort of below our standard here because of what Georgia's accomplished. That's now a reasonable thing to discuss after a game. It is worth pointing out, though, that there are a lot of teams around college football who were on Saturday had it a lot worse than Georgia did. How about 13th-ranked Virginia Tech losing to Old Dominion? Oklahoma got pushed to overtime against Army? What a wild weekend it was in college football. Luckily, Georgia avoided that drama. We'll see you tomorrow right here on Dog Nation Daily.